Seventh Committee on Rules. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3494. We will not move to the bill today. There are some folks that couldn't be here to testify, but I have let everybody know we are moving this bill. So, Sarah Westlin, come on up. You have some guests?
I guess I should bring Mark Pagel and Jan Lee, certified smart expert.
Is that a cell phone?
Cell phones should be.
If it is a cell phone, I'm happy to say it is not mine.
For the record, Madam Chair.
Or do you want to have Tiffany give a bill?
No, she already did yesterday.
I can't do it.
Very good.
And we think yours will be more interesting, shall we say. Thoughtful.
For the record, Senator Ben Westlin, District 27, here to testify strongly in behalf of House Bill 3494, the promulgation of the put in statute. The bill that puts into statute the administrative rules that continue the existence and viability of what we all fondly refer to in the region as the Deschutes Basin Mitigation Plan. In simplest terms, and I will be brief, Madam Chair, I could do this graphically. And Doug is handing these out now. We have what we call the whale. Don't ask me why they call it the whale, although if you look kind of creatively, maybe it does look like
it. Yeah, it does.
Can you see that, Madam Chair?
I can.
Then that's the end of my testimony.
Okay.
What Deschutes Basin mitigation is designed to do is put additional flow into the middle Deschutes. That's that area between Bend and Madras that is so impacted during the irrigation season that it actually gets down to about 75 CFS. This contrasted with the over 2,200 CFS in the upper Deschutes, 75 CFS in the middle Deschutes, and over 4,000 in the lower Deschutes.
Your picture is really cool.
You know,
it is for people who are visual sort of absorbers, learners, whatever you want to use. It's extremely helpful.
Here, and there's one other aspect of this that's critical, Madam Chair, and that's the groundwater, the hydrology of the region. This is all due to the good offices of Martha Pagel when she was head of water resources. These little dotties that you see, blue dotties, is the underground aquifer. That all flows really right underneath Bend, heads towards Prineville, hooks a left, and then subperks into Lake Billy Chinook. Key point ahead of the lower Deschutes flow. What Deschutes Basin groundwater essentially proposes, and indeed does, we've returned three times as much water to the lower or the middle Deschutes as we have pumped from the aquifer, is since it all ends up in the same place, what we do is we take water out of the aquifer, which flows into the lower Deschutes, and put it into the middle Deschutes, which obviously flows into the lower Deschutes. The whole concept is to get water into this, as you can see graphically, severely impacted middle Deschutes. With that, I'll hold my testimony and be happy to answer any questions.
Sarah Shields.
I disagree with you on one point. I think your key word is subperks. I hadn't heard that before, but the idea that it's actually, the aquifer is actually going into that Lake Billy Chinook anyway, you're just taking the same water and using a different route for it to get to the same destination.
And this is acre feet. I hate to be comparing CFS to acre feet, but we have put back into the middle Deschutes 2,400 acre feet and only taken out 700 in the aquifer. But the mitigation rules specify it has to be a one-for-one exchange. Has to be. One of the issues that no one can solve, speaking on behalf of some of the opponents of the bill, is the, can I have the flow chart? Is that we can't do that, and no one's been able to figure out a way how. If we could, we would. No, the bar graph. Yes. One of the issues is we can't put the water back in bucket for bucket, as the phrase goes, during the whole year. So when we put it back in, is the low flow of the irrigation season in the middle of the chutes when it's most impacted, and we don't put it back in the high flows, you know, in the winter time. This is lower flows on the, or wild and scenic flows, required wild and scenic flows on the lower Deschutes. That's what the litigation occurred from. And as you can see, even in the low, you know, the period of smallest gap, it's still above the wild and scenic required flows. But we put the water back in here. And there's concern that we don't put it back bucket for bucket when we take it in here. Makes no sense to me. Does that fully answer your question, Senator Shields?
Yeah. I don't even see why you would be required to put it back in when there's so much water there during that season. I don't understand that part.
That's really kind of one of our questions as well.
All right. Other questions? Senator Atkinson, lovely tie this morning.
Thank you very much. Madam Chair. Mr. Senator. I know this area quite a bit, the middle of the chutes, especially in the summer. What will this bill do under this scenario? What will it do to the temperatures of the middle of the chutes in the summer?
It has to lower them. I mean, you have more water going back into that river. It has, just in terms of the physics of mass, it has to lower the temperatures.
So the water coming in is what temperature, do you know, under this bill?
Pretty much it's water from the upper Deschutes.
So what you're
suggesting is I mean,
we told them, don't we?
Water coming in from here as opposed to being diverted for irrigation, water coming in from the upper Deschutes is going into the middle of Deschutes. It's the same temperature. But if you have in the lower Deschutes a reach that is severely impacted, you have less water flowing through, same ambient temperatures outside, then that's going to lower the temperature. More water you put through there, just in terms of mass, you're going to keep the temperatures lower in the middle of the chute. We're not out there sunbaking water and then dumping it in the lower or middle of the chute.
All right. Any other questions for Senator Westland? Senator Atkinson, are you still pondering?
Yeah, I think you're correct, but I don't know if that gets to the...
We have some expert hydrologists here that can more scientifically answer your question, I'm sure.
Thank you, Senator.
All right, who wants to come up next? Ms. Lee? Ms. Walters? Mr. Riggs? I know. I know. Sir Westland, we've decided to vote no on your bill since you haven't done your name changes in Deschutes County that will need to be changed.
It's in Squaw Creek. All right.
I think that's Martha Pagel's fault. I talked to her about 10 years ago. Maybe you can take your wrap out on.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Martha Pagel. I'm an attorney with Schwabe, Williamson, and Wyatt. I'm here today representing the City of Redmond and other interests who are involved in the Deschutes Basin and have been for some time. But as many of you know, my background in the Deschutes Basin goes back to the time when I was director of the Water Resources Department, and as Senator Westland described, was involved in the early stages of a major groundwater study in that basin that has formed the basis for this, the need for mitigation and the mitigation program that we're asking you to continue by passing House Bill 3494. The mitigation program is jeopardized because of a recent Court of Appeals decision that concluded that the rules are facially inadequate and basically threw the rules out. What we're hoping to explain to you and describe to you and provide evidence to you is that the rules really are the best and perhaps the only way to approach restoration of the Deschutes River, and that they have a tremendous amount of public involvement, community involvement, and backing, not only in the basin, but throughout the state by people who really do care about restoring and protecting the Deschutes River, but doing that in a way that also allows for reasonable development and growth, which is happening in that basin, and nobody can really stop it. The source of water for growth is groundwater. The hydrology study gives us a lot of information that we have a huge aquifer that is capable of sustaining that growth. And in fact, there's a whole lot more recharge coming into the aquifer each year than is ever proposed for development, and certainly proposed under the caps that are in this bill. But the study also tells us that any amount of groundwater withdrawal has some impact on this whale diagram that you're shown. And what happens is that by pumping out groundwater, you interrupt the discharge that eventually would come back into the river if it were not otherwise pumped. And so the mitigation program says that for every bucket that you pump out of the aquifer, you have to replace it with a bucket of mitigation water. And it's calculated on the annual volume of consumptive use. You have to replace at least the equal amount of your consumptive use. And under certain types of mitigation projects, you have to replace it by twice as much. So that's where we got back to the point that as the mitigation program is evolving, we're seeing that we're actually putting more water into the Deschutes River as a result of mitigation. Also should clarify, what is mitigation? It means that we are taking existing water rights and basically converting them to in-stream flow. So as you may know, historically in the Deschutes Basin, the major water uses have been irrigation, and over time a lot of those are converting, they're becoming urban uses, the lands are being changed. And as that happens, those water rights that had been for irrigation are converted to in-stream water rights. They are protected as in-stream water rights with a priority date from their original use. So that also works to help restore and maintain stream flows. This is not taking groundwater and pumping it into the river to restore stream flows. It's terminating existing irrigation uses and converting them to in-stream flow. So you're basically leaving surface water in the river instead of taking it out, as is happening right now. That's kind of a quick overview of what's in the bill. I did provide written testimony, including a copy of an article that you probably don't want to spend much time reading, but I included it, the Law Review article that I prepared, just as a demonstration of the fact that this mitigation program has received wide-scale attention in the West as an innovative approach to dealing with what we learn, what we are all learning about in the hydraulic connection between groundwater and surface water. And so many of us have been very proud of the progress that these rules represent, and we sure hope to have a chance to let them continue to do what we think is the good work in the basin.
Thank you. Ms. Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. I'm Jan Lee, manager of Squally Irrigation District over in Bend. We're one of the two districts most impacted by the urbanization, so the mitigation tool is very important to us. We all are represented together in a group called the Deschutes Water Alliance, 8 cities, 7 irrigation districts, the Deschutes River Conservancy, and the Confederated Tribes of the Warm Springs. We've gotten a grant from the federal government, and we're doing a number of studies by the end of the year, including one on storage optimization, which will look at scheduling flows. We'd like to continue that process to develop the plan for the basin, and significantly in this bill, we propose that that group be expanded to include other interests. meet with a mediator, which we will look for funding for. We've already had some offers for that kind of a process. And we would work until 2009 to put together a process that would be able to expedite getting even more water into the Deschutes. I gave you this chart. What has happened in regard to flow, if you look back to prior to the Deschutes Water Alliance, all that was in the river in the middle Deschutes, which you can see if you're right behind the river house in Bend, was the 30 CFS that the districts had voluntarily contributed. And then you see over the next couple of years that we've brought that up to 89 CFS this year. Would have been 120 if the rules had stayed in place, but we've had a slight setback there. We are looking at actually raising the flows to 250 CFS in 20 years or less with the plan that we're putting together at this point. The next step is, of course, to get the group together with your approval of this bill so we can continue on. And we're asking the legislature through this bill to just provide a protective playing field for the next 4 years so that we can accomplish that job. Without the rules, what happens is that agricultural land will be taken out of production with no protection. In this way, we can provide a smooth transition with municipal and other uses in the basin, helping to pick up some share of that cost for conservation, et cetera. As the good senator, Senator Westland, referred to, we've put in almost four times as much water as has been taken out for groundwater withdrawal. And in fact, our district had another chunk of 750 acre feet to put in with the city of Bend, and we haven't been able to do that this year, but we look forward to doing it in the near future. So we would support and urge your support of this bill so that we can continue our work in the basin.
Thank you, Ms. Lee. Ms. Pagel, I guess kind of what I'm struggling with is why, sort of your thoughts, given your background, as to why Water Watch brought the lawsuit in the first place. I mean, just if you have any thoughts on that.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'd be happy to respond, and obviously can't speak for Water Watch, but a couple of the key issues that came up and their concerns. One of the main issues and one that the court landed on was the fact that under this program, we can't guarantee that the potential impact of a groundwater use is going to be offset basically day by day, minute for minute, in the way that it occurs. And if you understand groundwater hydrology, and there are folks here from the department who could help explain that better, that's simply an impossible standard, and it certainly wasn't on any of our minds when we talked about mitigation in the first place. What this program does is, in converting the existing irrigation water rights, those are water rights that allow withdrawal only during a certain period of the year, during the irrigation season. So if you convert those back to in-stream flow rights, it's going to leave water in the stream in the time that it was previously removed, in those very seriously depleted flow times. So you get kind of an extra benefit there, but you don't have a guarantee that you're going to have water replaced year-round during those winter months. Water Watch and others have suggested that what about buying water from existing storage projects and releasing it into the system during the winter months to make sure that you do have a year-round offset? And I think many of us agree that that's a good idea to pursue, but right now it's not a legally available option. And so right now, legally, we just haven't been able to come up with any ways that you can actually restore the water year-round. So that's something that is on the list to be studied and evaluated. In the meantime, the reason that we can come before you with a straight face and say this program is satisfying the legal obligation and is doing good things is that because of the flow data that you see, the potential impact from these groundwater withdrawals during the summer or during the winter months, we think is so slight, and it's not even measurable within the range of error on existing measuring devices. So the conclusions are that it's not doing harm during the winter months and is providing great benefits in the summer months, and that's a reasonable trade-off under current legal and technical capabilities. So that, I think, is a major issue that's come forward.
Okay. Any other questions? Sir Ringo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that one of Wattawatch's concern is the timing issue that you just discussed. And you had mentioned that right now you've got the requirement to mitigate on an annual basis, mm-hmm. so that it's a bucket for bucket on an annual basis. But what is the requirement that prevents you from doing a lot of the mitigation during one part of the year and leaving the river dry in another part of the year? I'm not saying you would do that, but I'm saying what currently exists in law or in rules to prevent you from doing that?
Madam Chair, Senator Ringo, I'm not sure that I think that it's possible that the rules could allow for that result. The practical side of that is that the way that you provide mitigation is by acquiring these existing water rights, and you have to provide that mitigation to the system. So you know you're not going to dry up the river because the mitigation rules require that you provide the mitigation in advance of taking any groundwater out. So you know you've got some restoration happening. And the available sources of mitigation are water that is used in the summertime. So putting that together, you know that the practical outcome is that it's going to be restored. But I'm not sure that I could point to a line in the rules that would forbid it from drying up.
There's a whisper in your ear here. I'll wait for the...
may I add to that?
Sure,
Madam Chairman. Senator Ringo, if you look at this chart again, the 60 approximate CFS here would not be protected if the rules don't stay in place. This is actually mitigation water that has come in through this program that would go away if the rules go away.
Well, but Madam Chair, I don't think anybody says good things haven't been happening.
Okay.
The question is whether the rules are adequate. And I'm just posing a scenario that, at least to me, it's not covered in statute or in the rules.
The helpful whispering in my ear was to remind me that the rules do have a cap of, in the rules it's expressed as a total of 200 CFS cubic feet per second of new groundwater use, and the impact of that is something less than the 200 cubic feet per second. And the point of impact where that's felt is at a place in the river where the whale is fat. So you're not going to have drying up as a result of groundwater pumping. It's not pulling more water out of this area. It's pulling, to the extent there's any water is being pulled out because of groundwater use, it's happening in the fat part of the whale. So that's the reason you're not going to have any drying up, and you're only going to have restoration benefits.
The other benefit, Senator Ringo, is that in the rules, it's required that Fish and Wildlife, DEQ, and the other agencies annually review how the program is working with the Water Resources Commission, and they can stop that program if they see impacts that are not what is perceived to happen.
Okay. I mean, Madam Chair, just a comment. I know that one of Wattawatch's concern is the timing issue. And one response is, well, but we're doing better, so we don't need to really respond to the timing issue. And the other response is, yeah, but it's in a lower Deschutes, so there's plenty of water, so the timing issue, it's de minimis down there. And I guess I think those are good responses, but I don't know that they satisfy that we shouldn't make some effort to at least consider the timing or to minimize the impact of the timing. And that's where I was hoping in one of the amendments we could at least go to is to somehow address the timing issue rather than just say, well, it's too difficult, we can't do that. But, Madam Chair, another question for Ms. Pagel. One of the reasons I'm arguing Wattawatch's line is because nobody's here to do it for them.
Besides, Senator Ringo, we know how you love to argue for arguing.
Only for you, Madam Chair.
I know.
This bill was originally begun to roll back the court decision that recently occurred. And one of Wattawatch's complaints was that this bill does more than that. That, for example, the measurement baseline, there's some issues that do more than just roll back the court decision. And this is a question I asked Doug Riggs maybe a half hour ago, and he said, well, we could ask Jazz Adams, but I'll ask you since you're there. Martha, if we just said Section 2, on Section 2 of the bill, where it says it lists the statutes, and it essentially just says that the rules satisfy the requirements directly or indirectly to mitigate under the statutes, and then just put a period there and delete the rest of Section 2, Does that allow the mitigation program to go forward? In other words, we don't make the clarifications and say subsection 2, for example.
Madam Chair, Senator Ringo. I think if the legislature says that the existing rules satisfy the requirements, then that does it.
Okay.
That the current rules are protected. I think the problem is that by not giving further guidance as to some of these key points, you leave yourself open anytime there's any proposed amendment to the rule, or that somebody could come back in with a different argument of why the rules aren't satisfactory. So I think there's some usefulness in including the clarifications that are laid out in Section 2, but I do think that the legislature has the power to say these rules are okay, period.
Okay.
And I would certainly ask Jazz Adams from the Attorney General's office to comment on that as well.
Okay. And the reason I raised that is just that was a conversation I had with Joe DeVoe late yesterday. Was he said, you know, Senator, the bill purportedly was just to attempt to address the court decision, but it goes much further than that. And really, if can we just address the court decision? If you want to undo our court victory, then let's just undo the court victory, but not go further than that.
If I may, members of the committee, that undoing the court opinion, it doesn't feel right to sit up here and say that we want to overturn a court decision, except to the extent that many of us who are involved in that feel that court decision, on one level, is ripe for appeal, that there are so many concerns about the reasoning or in the lack of reference to information in the record that needs to come out, and that it doesn't reflect either the legislative intent or the real program. That aside, that the court opinion itself also invites the legislature to step in. It recognizes that it's a very harsh and extreme outcome, and it invites your mm-hmm. action. So we are... That's why we're bringing this to you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much. Any other questions? I think you wore us out. Okay. All right. Mr. Riggs?
Madam Chair, I guess what I'd like to ask is what your plans are, and if we're going to come back for another hearing, maybe we could either have WRD and the Justice Department come up now. I have a one-pager to walk through the -7 amendments that I could do now, or I could do it when the bill comes back.
Senator Ringo?
Well, Madam Chair, I would like the chance to talk to the Justice Department and WRD, and it'd probably be more efficient if we did it outside of the room, but I defer
okay.
to you.
All right.
I would if I could.
Do a walk through the -A7s, please.
And afterwards, what I'd like to have is Phil Ward come up and address the water temperature issue, because I think that's a red herring. No pun
okay.
intended.
Knowing that we have a zillion people on our executive appointment list, and we have to be on the floor at 10 o'clock.
Red herring. There's a time of fish.
They don't have herring in the Deschutes.
Herring in the Deschutes.
Jeez.
You're not stocking the Deschutes with red herring.
Then we could all have herring salad sandwiches for lunch.
Yum.
We'll do hatchery on the Deschutes.
Madam Chair, members of the committee.
They're really good, Senator Westland. You can come to my house at Christmas time.
Can we come?
It's still out.
You can. You and my brother would get along quite well. Okay, Mr. Riggs, go.
I'm going to briefly explain the -7 amendments, which you do not have before you because they're not prepared yet. These are changes to the House version of the bill, and some of them are changes that we committed to in the House. We had to move the bill quickly in the House, and we agreed at the time to put some further clarification in the bill when it came to this side. And then several of them have come directly as a result of suggestions from a variety of the interest groups, the tribes, and Senator Ringo and Senator Brown's staff, Eric Carlson. I don't have the dash sevens in front of me, so instead of telling you where in the dash sevens they are, I'm just going to walk 1 through 7 through them. The dash sevens really do 7 things that were different than the House bill. The first thing it does is it puts into statute a cap of no more than 170 CFS for all groundwater permit applications to be approved after the bill is passed. The rules include a cap of 200 CFS. Approximately 26 CFS have been granted for groundwater withdrawals, and therefore we capped it at 174. And I remind you that the impact zone for groundwater withdrawals is the Lower Deschutes. And if you look at the Lower Deschutes flow gauges in the Moody, what you see is the average CFS is in the summer months is at about 4,200 CFS. So that gets back to the question about drying up the river in the summer months. If there are 4,200 CFS in the river and the maximum cap is 200 CFS for groundwater, there is absolutely no way that either you would hit a dry river or even reach the scenic water flow caps on an average annual basis. Now, we can get into daily flows and the differences of the years, and that's complicated, so I won't get into that at this point in time. The second thing the amendment does in Part 1 is it requires continued mitigation for these permits, and this is something that has been, I think, a point of contention and misunderstanding at some point. Mitigation water being put in the river is permanent as long as the permit for groundwater continues to be exercised. And so as long as someone is pumping groundwater, they are continued to be required to meet the conditions of that permit, which include mitigation. So the water that's going to the river will continue to be put in the river for as long as that permit is being is in place. The second change is that it conditions any new permits on a finding by the department that scenic waterway flows and in-stream water rights in the basin are met on at least as frequently as the long-term representative base flow periods. And that's a technical definition. That's the definition the department has adopted to ensure that we do not negatively impact in any way, shape, or form the flows in the river. The third is it requires an annual report in the program, which I think is fairly significant. And if the report finds that flows are not being met, the department must initiate proceedings to close certain areas to further appropriations and or take other actions to ensure that base period flows continue. The fourth is language that was developed very recently in the Senate process. It came out of a recommendation in the House and the Senate from Water Watch. They would like a task force. We were concerned that a task force would have a fiscal impact. And so we've committed to trying to raise either private money, federal money, or other money to have a facilitated process to bring all the interests together. The Deschutes Basin Alliance has been working cooperatively with the tribes, the DRC, irrigation districts, and municipalities. We're an open process. We would hope to be able to involve any other parties, Water Watch, or whoever else who wanted to participate. And then that group would come up with a report outlining a whole series of questions, measurement standards, flow impacts, et cetera, that would come back by 2009. That report would also include data on efforts to ensure that mitigation takes place on a seasonal instead of simply an annual basis. And this is something that Senator Ringo and Eric Carlson suggested. It's very difficult to do winter mitigation unless you either get the federal reservoirs to release water or you allow for groundwater recharge during high flow months. The federal government has said no every time we've asked them about reservoir recharge, and aquifer recharge has been objected to by Water Watch. But we are committed to pursuing wintertime mitigation to the extent that we can. The report will require data on that. The sixth was language requested by the Warm Springs tribes. They requested language that the report contain information on the impact of the program on efforts to restore anadromous fish runs to the basin. Currently, there are no anadromous fish runs above Pelton Brown Butte, and there's an effort with the new PGE tribal FERC decision to try to improve fish passage. We are very confident that if you look at that chart of the flows increasing in the middle Deschutes, that our program will assist in that effort. So we're fairly confident that the report will be able to show positive results on that front. And then finally, we had been asked to put in a sunset clause. This is a clause that makes us the most uncomfortable. My clients, the Central Oregon cities in particular, worry that there may be people who will not participate in a program that may sunset at some point down the road. That adds a level of uncertainty, but be that as it may, we've agreed to a sunset if flows are not being met in the basin by 2013. And that will give us 8 years plus the 2.5 that we've already had, I think, to make a fairly accurate determination about whether or not we are meeting scenic waterway flows and other targets in the basin.
Thank you. Questions? All right, who's from DOJ? Mr. Adams? Why don't you come up? Ms. Guest, why don't you come up as well?
DOJ.
Oh, I got three, never mind. Okay.
Madam Chair, Phil Ward from the department, and Jazz Adams from DOJ. We don't want to give you more than you want right now, so we're happy to stand
for
questions.
Or all right.
A full meal deal, whichever you choose.
I have an extra large hot chocolate this morning, so that kind of tells you where I'm at. Questions for folks want to ask questions?
Madam Chair.
Senator Ringo.
I offered to do this out of the room, but do you want me to do it here?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. How would the bill operate if we took the House Bill 3494 as it came over from the House? And you're nodding because you know what I'm going to suggest is that we just, after on line 9, put a period there before the word if and delete the rest of subsection 2.
Madam,
does it work?
Senator, we've done some quick thinking on that. I think Jazz is prepared to give you our first blush response to that.
Yeah, but you're on the record.
Madam Chair, Senator Ringo, do you mean that the bill would end? My name is Jazz Adams from the Department of Justice. I'm the Assistant Attorney in Charge in the Natural Resource Section. I was involved in the court case that has led to this legislation. Madam Chair, Senator Ringo, do you mean that a period after and line 9, and that would be the entirety of the bill?
Well, you could continue the report. I don't think that would be the end of section 2. And we could include the reports, but I don't think that's...
The report is in section 3.
Right.
And then section 4 is the applicability clause, which would need to remain, and section 5 is the emergency clause, which also need to remain.
Right. So in other words, we're just deleting those portions of section 2.
We see that as being acceptable because it accomplishes the main thrust, which was very simple, which was to allow the mitigation program to continue.
Okay.
In response to the court decision.
Okay, and then, Mr. Vice Chair, just a follow-up question, and maybe this is better for Doug Riggs or Martha Pagel or somebody else, or you, but so if we did that and then put about an 8-year sunset on the mitigation program as we're contemplating in the Dash 7s, how does that package sit?
Chair, Senator, I think the same reservations exist with the sunset that you heard articulated earlier. We have to make sure that if a sunset is crafted, that it doesn't cause the program to be so tenuous that folks won't participate.
Well, Martha Pagel expressed that if the sunset clarified that any permits issued during that period of time would remain valid, even after the period of the sunset, no matter what happened, then it probably wouldn't have a negative impact on water banking and mitigation.
And, Mr. Chair, Senator, we think that's most likely correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions for the panel? Don't go anywhere. You're dismissed, but don't leave the room.
Thank you.
Ms. Guest. And anyone else you wish to have testify? Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Marianne Guest, representing the Wild Salmon Center. I have a request and wanted to know the committee's what they're going to do with it, if they're going to give an opportunity to testify later on this afternoon about the amendments. Dave Moskowitz, our expert in this area, is delayed and cannot be here right now, so I understand that this may carry on.
You need to ask the chair.
I know, she's not here. So.
It's just the chair.
Well,
we heard her say earlier she wasn't going to do it this morning, that she was going to return us.
Yeah, and it's been the chair's habit to not move or take action on amendments prior to having an opportunity for all the proponents and opponents to do an analysis on the amendment. Uh-huh. So, and I passed legal counsel in the hallway saying he told me that he was still working on the Dash 6s, and now we're conceptualizing apparently Dash 7. So I don't think that there'll be a movement before there's another opportunity to testify.
Thank you.
But I'll certainly defer the question to the chair.
Thank you. That's my biggest concern. And for the record, at this point, Wild Salmon Center is opposed to the bill, and our main concern is the fact that the mitigation trades cold, clear underground water for irrigation water, water that's been sitting around is warm, and that's going to make an impact on the rivers. So we look for the opportunity this afternoon maybe to address it further. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Guest. I guess I've looked at the Deschutes, and it's not exactly a bucket of mud. I mean, you wouldn't want to sit in that water longer than just a few minutes.
It's cold.
It is cold.
Right.
Yeah. So, but you think there's a qualitative difference? There's a quality difference between
the water that is currently flowing, yes, and the water that will replace it, absolutely.
Yeah. And I guess I'm a little confused. Isn't the irrigation water that would be traded prior to the removal from the river? So it's run-of-the-river water we're talking about.
It's been sitting around for a little while.
I don't know. Sitting. I've not seen a lot of Deschutes water sitting anywhere, but I don't wish to be argumentative. You've made your point.
Thank you.
Ma'am?
Yep. Jessica Hamilton, Legislative Affairs of the Oregon League of Conservation Voters. Chair Perioli. Actually, I guess you're Vice Chair Perioli. And members of the committee. Exactly. I understand. I'm here representing the Oregon Conservation Network. It's a coalition of about 80 different conservation groups across the state. And water quality, this particular bill is the most important water quality related bill for us right now, this session. So I just kind of wanted to give our support to the work that Water Watch is doing. I know that they've been in negotiations on this bill and on other bills this session, and we definitely will defer to their expertise on this. And we do look forward to y'all taking this up a little bit later on the session. And despite my accent, I'm not here actually representing the fine representative, Wisnett. But I do appreciate the work that he has done to educate us on their viewpoints on this bill as well.
Mm-hmm. I have a question. It has to do with the bucket for bucket mitigation. That is a standard that's been difficult to meet. It's sometimes physically challenging, hydrologically challenging, because of the ebb and flow of and the seasonality of river flows. Is that a standard to which there is no possible area of compromise?
Yeah, again, I'm not the expert on this, but I do, just based on the science that I have taken in grad school and undergraduate, is the idea that as an aquifer is a constant flow. So the issues that Senator Ringo brought up in his discussion are ones that we would agree to as well, that the issue is just making sure that the water is constantly distributed throughout the river during all seasons.
Okay. Well, I guess my familiarity is more with the John Day, which is not a dammed system. There is irrigation from it.
Mm-hmm.
In the winter, you just take your life in your hands to get in that river. Because of the flows. In the summertime, you can walk across the river without getting your shoes wet above the sole. And yet that's a very, very productive river system for fish. And one of the, we hear it discussed as the last great wild salmon river in America. And it, I understand that there is a desire to see a constant flow from the aquifer, and I'd have to talk to some hydrologists about that. Mm-hmm. I know we recharge them from the snow and the rain in the wintertime, and that they release, all year round. But I certainly would argue that there is an ebb and flow in all river systems that are surface systems.
Sure.
So, I don't know. Connecting those two things seems maybe apples and oranges. But questions for the panel?
No.
Seeing none.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else wishing to testify on this bill?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Doug Riggs. I just wanted to correct immediately what I believe needs to be corrected, which is that the irrigation water that we are talking about for recharge in the middle of the Deschutes is not water that has been used for irrigation someplace else and then put back in the river. It is water that is coming down from the Cascades, usually very cold water, and we leave it in stream instead of taking it out to irrigate. So I think the department could answer that in more detail at some point down the road. But we do not believe that water quality is impacted negatively. In fact, we believe that especially in Middle Deschutes, leaving that cold water in stream, increasing cold water flows in Middle Deschutes lowers the temperature and helps the river.
Well, I think there was a characterization that this water had been sitting around.
It flows relatively rapidly. I've floated that river and kayaked that river a number of times from Sun River all the way down to the irrigation diversions and then south of there. And as you can see in the blue chart, there's quite a bit of flow until you reach just north of Bend. And that's water that comes down relatively rapidly, except in that one stretch of Drake Park where it widens out. I don't want to take too much time, and maybe we should...
Are there places in the Upper Deschutes that violate the clean water standard for temperature? Is that on the water quality impaired list?
Mr. Chair, Phil Ward for the record. I'm not certain of that. But I think your basic characterization, Mr. Chair, earlier on this issue is in principle accurate. This is water that's not diverted for irrigation purposes. It's staying in the river. Now much of this is stored water. It's stored up upstream in the upper basin for irrigation purposes. But after it moves out of those reservoirs into the river, then this is water that's not diverted for irrigation purposes, but is staying in the river, and in our view would be a benefit from a temperature standpoint in that regard.
Okay. Other comments, questions? Seeing, hearing, none.
Mr. Chair, I was going to ask how Doug Riggs kayaked over Benham Falls, but I'll hear that later.
Okay, then. If there's no other testimony on this bill, we're going to go ahead and close the public hearing. And we're going to go into our agenda for confirmations. Close the public hearing. We're going to open the public hearing on executive appointments. Actually, it's a work session on executive appointments. And we will begin with a telephone call to Sue Burkholder. And I will rely on Tiffany to accomplish the telephonic connection. Ms. Burkholder?
Yes.
This is State Senator Ted Ferrioli. I'm Vice Chair of the Rules Committee.
Yes, sir.
We have you on the speakerphone, and this morning we have undertaken the issue of executive appointments work sessions. So we're about to offer you an opportunity to talk to the committee and also, for the record, explain why you think you would be the very best appointment for the office for which you've been nominated. So perhaps you could give us a little background about yourself, and we could proceed from there.
Well, thank you. My name is Sue Burkholder, and the governor has appointed me to the State Library Board of Trustees. I myself am a retired librarian. I just recently retired as library director of the Hannon Library at Southern Oregon University. I've been a librarian for 33 years, worked mostly in academic libraries, but did spend some time in a law library and a public library in St. Louis. I'm deeply committed to libraries. I have two daughters who grew up spending every other Saturday in the public library. I think public libraries are important for children and for all the citizens of the state. And I think our state library has a mandate to help develop all of our libraries. You know, they serve as the library for state government, and they provide the reading materials for the blind and visually disabled. But my particular interest, I think, is in the state library as a leader for all libraries in the state, and for raising the level of public and school and academic library services.
Thank you. Ms. Burkholder, what role do you see, this is Senator Brown, by the way, I just rejoined, what role do you see for libraries in the area of literacy? And I'm sorry if you've already addressed this issue.
In literacy, I think there are several things that libraries can do. One is simply by being there and by having materials in a variety of formats and at a variety of reading levels available for people perhaps who are not financially able to purchase books for themselves or their children. I think that public libraries also can provide venues and particular programs to organizations that promote literacy activities. And then I know that public libraries do a lot in terms of outreach to particularly underserved areas, to homebound, to preschools, perhaps trying to get children interested in reading. They do programs with public schools to promote literacy.
Thank you. My other question, we're wrestling with the issue of school funding, and it's been pretty clear that at some of the cuts we're making, a number of schools will lose their librarians at the elementary level. Do you think we should care? And if so, why?
I think you should care deeply, because I think that that reading a love of books, a love of the various information resources, is the foundation for education. And beyond the sort of structured learning that goes on in classrooms, children need to have that sort of questing, seeking desire for knowledge that can be certainly very much stimulated and fostered by a good school library experience. I think that probably libraries are more important in the elementary and grade school grades than they are anywhere else. I think it's fundamental. I think it's devastating when school libraries can't be staffed, can't be supplied.
Thank you. Any other questions for Ms. Burkholder?
Just a comment.
Senator Farrioli.
Ms. Burkholder's resume is very impressive. The fact that she has chaired the Library Council for the Oregon University System, the fact that she's currently or has served as a board member of the Oregon Library Association and the Association of College and Research Libraries, is just some indication of her qualifications. Thank you, Ms. Burkholder.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, committee.
All right. Anything else? We're going to let her go. We're going to let you go. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
So much.
Bye-bye.
Holy smokes. All right. Who do we need to do next? Okay. I'm going to open a public hearing on the following folks. Is there anyone here? Anybody here from the? I want to testify on the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. Board on Public Safety Standards and Training. Appraiser Certification and Licensure Board. Oregon State Lottery Commission. Sustainability Board. Board on Public Safety Standards and Training. State Commission on Children and Families. Employment Appeals Board, State Housing Council, State Marine Board, State Board of Direct Entry Midwifery, Oregon Economic and Community Development Commission, State Board of Higher Education,
Okay. I know I'm going through them pretty quickly, so. Okay. Welcome.
Chair Brown, members of the committee, hello. My name is Bob Keith. I'm the appraiser, certification and licensure board administrator, and our appointee, Sarah Frazier, is actually out of state today. And I wanted to let you know that I have known Sarah back when I was an appraiser from 20 years ago. Have a professional acquaintance with her and familiar with her, and I want to let you know that I and the staff and the board are very excited about the possibility of Sarah joining the board.
Thank you. We have a phone number for her. Do you have more recent information? It's a cell phone. Okay, yeah. So we are going to touch base with her by phone.
Thank you
very much for joining us today. All right, in fact, let's see if we can get a hold of her right now.
Sarah Frazier.
Hi, Sarah Frazier. This is Kate Brown calling from the Oregon Senate Rules Committee. In addition to me, there's Senator Shields, Senator Farioli, and our committee administrator present. We've got a few folks in the audience, and you are on speakerphone, which means your testimony is being piped throughout the Capitol. So just for your information.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen.
Good morning. What we'd like to do this morning is just have you tell us a little bit about yourself and tell us why you'd like to serve on this particular board, and then committee members may have some questions.
All right. Let's see, I have been appraising since 1979. I'm also a licensed broker, and I was in sales from 72 to 79. I have my SRA designation from the Appraisal Institute. I've been vice chair and chair of the local, of the UT chapter of the Appraisal Institute until it disbanded. Let me see, I raised two daughters and was busy with them. And now that they're gone, I thought that it would be a good time for me to give back to the industry that helped support me and educate my daughters.
Great. Thank you. Any questions? I think you're passing with flying colors. The administrator of the appraiser commission just testified in your behalf, so you're in good shape. We appreciate your willingness to join us when you're out of town.
Oh, golly. Well, thank you so much. I had you on vibrate, and I just flew out of my chair. I'm sitting in the front row of this classroom.
All right. Well, we'll let you get back to class. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Let me go down the list, continue down the list. State Board of Direct Injury Midwifery. Oregon Economic and Community Development Commission, State Board of Higher Education, State Board of Pharmacy, Board on Public Safety Standards and Training, Oregon Tourism Commission, Trustee of the State Library, Oregon State Lottery Commission, Board of Commissioners of the Port of Portland, Sustainability Board, TriMet Board, State Board of Direct Entry Midwifery. Okay, let's go back up and get the rest of the folks on the phone, but we're still in public hearing. I'm sorry? No, I'm public hearing. Yes. I got to go back up for a work session in just a minute. No, I did these down here.
Hello.
Hi, is this Ms. Smith?
It is.
Hi, this is Kate Brown calling from the Senate Rules Committee. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
Good. You have at the dais Senator Farioli, myself, and Senator Shields.
How are you today?
Good. We are great.
And in the room, you've got a few folks, and you are on speaker, which means you're being piped throughout the state capitol. So just to warn you, no swear words or anything like that.
I've been there many times.
Just want you to tell us a little bit about yourself and why you'd like to serve on OWEB.
Well, one of the things that I love about Oregon, and I have participated for really the past 25-plus years, is the fact that you can participate in citizen government. And I've done that by being a member of the Oregon Public Broadcasting Board, beginning back in 1981 when it was a commission. I spent 7 years on the Oregon Health and Sciences University Board, and I currently serve on the Board of Medical Examiners. And for those of us who are glad to pay our tax money and have things go reasonably well in Oregon, I feel like I'm a real participant. And so that's my main reason. In addition to that, my husband and I have been in Central Oregon for 35 years now, mm-hmm. and we have extensive interest in ranch lands, and we're really interested in conservation and those kinds of things for the right reasons. So I think that my experience might be able to help with that.
Great. Questions for Ms. Patricia Smith, who'd like to serve on OWEB. I think you're off the hook.
Well, I like the way you do business. You've done your homework.
We really appreciate your willingness to serve on this board. Given if we can get a full contingent of members here, we may move forward on appointments today. If not, it'll be next week. If there's any issues, Ms. Gosteran from the governor's office will let you know.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
So nice to talk to nice people.
You mean outside the door? Yeah, I get it.
I'm like, oh, a real person.
Phone calls are
out. One, two, three more. And then one more in the room.
Hello, this is Larry Goff.
Hi, Larry Goff. This is Kate Brown calling. How are you this morning?
Good, Madam Chair. How are you?
I'm good. You are on speakerphone, and you have four senators in front of you, Senator Shields, Senator Farrioli, Senator Atkinson, a few folks in the audience, and you are being piped throughout the state capitol, so I advise you to use appropriate language.
I will try.
Would like to tell us a little bit about your background and why you would like to serve on the BPSST board.
Okay, well, thank you. First of all, thanks for the opportunity, Madam Chair and Senators. I am interested in this appointment because I just think it's a very important part of the training of the safety, public safety officials throughout rural Oregon and metro Oregon through all different parts. So I just think it's an important position. A little bit about myself. I'm currently the president of the Oregon Fire District Directors Association, president of 12 and Valley Fire and Rescue's Board of Directors, and worked for Lake Oswego Fire for 23 years. Currently, I'm a battalion chief in charge of emergency management. So just with my background and my experience and working with the association, I just feel that it's a good fit, and I'm willing to serve, and I look forward to the opportunity.
Do you have any concerns in terms of your time, your ability to take time to serve on the board?
No, I've checked with the fire chief, Lake Oswego Chief Ed Wilson, and he's supportive of allowing me to have time to serve on the board and fulfill the functions of the position.
Great. Other questions? Mr. Goff, you got us when we're in a good mood. No one has any questions. We really appreciate your willingness to serve on this particular board and your willingness to serve the state. And if there are any concerns about your appointment, someone from the governor's office will be in touch.
All okay? right. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Bye-bye. Okay.
Hello.
Is this Ms. Sorensen?
Speaking.
Hi, this is Kate Brown calling from your Senate Rules Committee.
Yes, hello.
Hi, and in front of you, you're on speakerphone, and you have four senators, myself, Senator Shield, Senator Farioli, Senator Atkinson.
Okay.
And you're on speakerphone and being piped throughout the Capitol. What we'd like to hear from you this morning is a little bit about your background and why you'd like to serve on this particular board.
Okay.
Other than we know there's very few women on the board, so we know your presence is needed.
Wonderful. Well, I'm glad to hear that. I was approached by the City of Redmond Police Chief Lane Roberts, who, as I understand, is on that board. And he suggested that I apply. And so, you know, when the police chief comes to you and suggests something, you usually go along with it. But I also am very involved in a program called Leadership Redmond. And assist in kind of developing new leaders for our community.
Mm-hmm.
And public safety education is one of the issues that we cover during that. So during the process of that, I've come to understand the importance of that and felt that this was a good opportunity, a good way to get involved in that.
Great. And is it Leadership Redmond?
Uh-huh.
Is that funded through a Ford Foundation grant?
It is. It's actually self-funded.
Okay.
We have it's a nonprofit organization that is funded through donations and participation.
All right, great. Questions for Ms. Sorensen? I think you're off the hook this morning.
Oh.
We really do appreciate you serving on this particular board. It's a very large board. We think you will add a unique perspective on the board. Most of the board members are law enforcement officials, and most of them men. And we appreciate your willingness to step up to the plate.
Well, and I'm honored to be asked, so I appreciate the opportunity.
All righty. Take care and good luck.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, lottery out of the country. Last but not least. Yeah, I did her already. That's okay. You're out of the room. You want to find Mr. Ringo? Senator Shields? Somebody?
Sure.
Okay, well, no, we got a volunteer. You're okay.
Right.
Hi, Mr. Sen?
Yes.
Hi, this is Kate Brown calling from the Senate Rules Committee.
Yes, how are you?
Good. How are you this morning?
Hi.
A couple of things. We have you on speakerphone, so yes. You're going throughout the building. And then secondly, you have four senators in front of you, myself, Senator Shield, Senator Farioli, and Senator Atkinson. And we just want to just chat with you briefly this morning about why you're interested in serving on this particular board and your experience.
Thank you.
My understanding is you're replacing Mark Kane.
Well, yes, that's my understanding.
Okay. All right. So could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Oh, sure. Well, again, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Trey Sen. I'm with Economic Development with Klamath County. I've been in Klamath County for 13 years. We do the economic and industrial development for the city and the county, and have become more and more interested in working with basically renewable energy projects or minimum use of energy, sustainability, whatever the right word is, and was very honored when the governor nominated me, and I think I'll be a dedicated person going to the different meetings and working and learning along the way about the potential of sustainability.
Thank you. And you said you've been in Klamath Falls for 13 years?
Yeah.
Things have really changed a lot in that community in the last 13 years.
You are certainly correct. We have seen, you know, to us, things like geoheat and sunshine and all of that was something that some of us just kind of did. We never knew how smart it was until about the last year. But yes, we have really brought some nice new industries in the last couple of years. I think NEW Corporation was Oregon's largest hire last year with 650 people.
And what do you think has been the most critical factors in sort of the new economic development that's happening in Klamath Falls?
I think a dedicated group of public and private individuals has been the mainstay, whether it's the president of the Oregon Institute of Technology or our county commissioners or the city management. We've all decided that we just have to work together to get economic development and growth and diversification and retention. It's just awfully important that a smaller community act with one voice. And I'll give a lot of credit to present governor, who has certainly shown a great deal of interest in us in South Central Oregon, and I think the feeling is mutual.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Sen. We're losing some of our senators. Senator Shields.
Yes, just one quick question. You said you moved to Klamath County 13 years ago. I lived there in the 70s. And you talk about economic development in the city and the county. What kinds of things are you doing outside of the city of Klamath Falls? Is there much you can do in that?
What kind of economic development outside the city?
Yeah.
Some of the really big projects include the city of Klamath Falls and Pacific Power going together for the, I think it was a $400 million cogenerational plant. And then the county and the city have tentatively agreed on a new California-Oregon border power generation plant that's about $600 million. There's also been a real diversified and united effort to continue working together for the farmers in the entire county, especially those that have been sometimes affected really tough by some of the environmental impacts and things of that nature. Again, we all try to all for one and one for all.
Thank you, Mr. Sen. I don't think we have any further questions. We really appreciate your willingness to serve on this particular board, and we hope it's a wonderful catalyst for your particular area, and we hope it's a good experience for you as well.
Thank you so much.
All righty. Take care. I need Senator Ringo. Can you scream at him, please?
Drag him.
If not, we'll call the Senate President. All right, we're going to close the public hearing. Chair would open a work session on the Commission for Blind Construction Contractors Board. Do we need to do all these separately?
I think you need to do this separately.
All right, Chair would move Donald Dart, Joyce Green to the Commission for the Blind. Any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Chair would move the appointment of Dennis Shad to the Construction Contractors Board. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Chair would move Michelle Boucher to the State Board of Direct Entry Midwifery. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Chair would move Robert Cooley, Peter Green to the Oregon Youth Program Advisory Board. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Chair would move the Oregon Patient Safety Commission Board of Directors, Judith Hibbard, Bruce Johnson, Greg Miller. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Chair would move Harold Burke Silvers, Robert King, and Robert Tardiff to the Board on Public Safety Standards and Training. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Chair would move Jeffrey Job to the Oregon Tourism Commission. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Chair would move the appointment of Randall Pape to the Oregon Transportation Commission. Any discussion? Any objection? So So ordered. Chair would move Bobby Bruno, Jim Nakano, and Helen Westbrook to the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. Any discussion? Senator Shields.
Just a real quick comment. I'm probably going to try maybe talk with those folks and also Patricia Smith on the phone, just personally because of my interest in OWEB.
Okay, that's fine.
And its function. So I just wanted to kind of be on record about doing that.
All right.
More of an educational thing, I hope, for them and me.
All right. Any objection? So ordered. Chair would move Ellie McPeak to the Commission for Women. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Chair would like to go ahead and move the appointments that we heard. I think it's the first. One, two, three, four, five, six. The first seven appointments, Watershed Board through BPSST, Wanda Sorensen. We don't normally do this. I'm just concerned that where we are in session and would like to move forward on these appointments. And then move the appearances that are waived that are all reappointments. Commission on Children and Families through the State Marine Board. We had a miscommunication there, so I'd like to at least have an opportunity to talk to those folks, and we didn't do that today. Any concerns? Yeah. Okay. So, Chair would open a work session on the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. Senator Shields would like to talk to Ms. Smith. I think she thinks she would have no objection. Any further discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Chair would move Larry Goff to the Board on Public Safety Standards and Training. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Chair would move Sarah Frazier to the Appraiser Certification and Licensor Board. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Chair would move Sue Burkholder to the Trustees of the State Library. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Chair would move Pamela Fogg to the Oregon State Lottery Commission. Any discussion? I'm sorry, we didn't do her. Oh, that's right. She was out of town.
Yes, correct.
Okay,
I'm sorry, is she a current member on the board?
No. Let's hold her. Thank you for signals. Chair withdraws a motion. Chair would move Trey Senn to the Oregon Sustainability Board. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Chair would move Wanda Sorensen to the Board on Public Safety and Standards and Training. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Okay, down to the waiver of appearances. These are all reappointments. Any concerns about moving forward on them?
Madam Chair.
Senator Ringo.
I was very disappointed with the performance of the Lottery Commission.
Okay.
And I am happy to give you a courtesy vote today.
All right.
And I may vote no on the Senate floor, Mr. Tim.
Let's set that one aside. You know what? Let's just run these by. Before we move forward, let's just have a caucus conversation and talk with Senator Ferrielli so we don't get into problems on the floor. All right. Did we do the first page? I can't remember. I think at this point that concludes our business. Unless there's anything further, the chair, Senator Carter, would like to have a bill drafted relating to school funding. She's out of priorities. I think it's fair to say the bill won't delay the end of the session. And so the chair would move that we draft a bill for Senator Carter regarding school funding. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Anything further to come before the committee?
I need to discuss carriers with you.
Yes. My inclination, would one of you like to carry all those appointments? We can, if one of you carries, we can do them on block on the Senate floor. Senator Ringo, you want to carry?
You wish.
Thank you for volunteering. All right. Senator Ringo will carry all those appointments. We can do them on block.
Okay.
Anything further? We're adjourned. Thanks, guys.